This is your host, Trevor Caritzen. Got a very special guest joining me, Doug Miller. Welcome to the show.
What's going on, man? How you doing?
So, Doug, the reason I want to get you on is I'm a big fan of yours, first of all. But we recently had on guests like Mark Lobliner, and I want to get on a guest like you. Guys who are more than just an amazing body. You know, like, you obviously have an incredible physique. You're argued to be the best natural bodybuilder of all times. But you're also a family man. You got a wife, you got kids, you own two successful companies. I want to know, like, what makes you tick? Did you always have this crazy work ethic and drive, or is this something you had to teach yourself?
No, I mean, it started from a very young age, no matter what I was doing. Like, I don't know if it's like a fear of losing or a fear of not, you know, succeeding. I don't know what it is, but I've always been very competitive, and whether it was sports or, you know, academics, I always wanted to be the best at whatever I was doing. And so I think that's just, and when you have that kind of attitude, you know, it just drives you completely. And so whatever it is, like, I don't have the best genetics in the world, but I literally have worked my butt off, you know, to make my physique as best as I possibly could. You know, same with being in school. I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but it was my goal when I went to college. I was like, I want to graduate with a 4.0. I don't want any A minuses. I want all A's.
And Doug, you know, did you have a very stern father growing up?
Absolutely not. That's the crazy, super supportive. You know, he was like my coach in a lot of my like baseball and stuff like that. But you know, he didn't care whether or not I played or not. And no, not at all. I mean, there was no pressure to be a great athlete or to, you know, get good grades. It just kind of came. It was just there. Yeah.
I have the exact opposite. My dad's a pastor. And he's just one of those very strict military like fathers. Yeah. I remember graduating math 30, and I was in the IB stream. So that's like the advanced stream. Yeah. I graduated 99%. And all he said to me is, it's not 100. You know what I mean? He's just like nothing I did was ever good enough. Like, I played AAA hockey, and one game we won 6-5. I scored all 6 goals. And when I got in the car, you know, like, you'd think he would say something like, hey, awesome job on the win or something. He just said, you're a puck hog that game. Like he just like, and I hated it. I hated it because I was always trying to get his validation. But yeah, it taught me work ethic. And looking back now, I realize I've never met anyone who works harder than my father. And I really think there's something to be said for that, because that, like, just like a strong work ethic is something that it takes you so far in life. And if you like, that's a skill that if you have, you can really do anything. You can apply that to anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of the things that I've chosen to do, like, I'm not the best at, but I've been successful at them. And it's because of that work ethic. Like, if I don't know something, if I don't know how to do something, I figure it out, right? And, you know, that's what I look for in employees. It's just like, you don't have to be the smartest person in the world, but it's that work ethic. It's like, if you don't know how to do something, are you going to figure it out, or are you just going to sit there and cry about it? You know, like, that's huge for me. And so that's the way it was at school. If I didn't understand something, I would literally work at it until, you know, like that light bulb went off. And so, it's kind of been just my personality from day one. It wasn't something drilled into me from my parents necessarily. Obviously, hard work was instilled in me from my parents, but it wasn't like militant or anything like that.
Do you know what Adobe Premiere is? Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's a video editing software. So, mm-hmm. Evolutionary Radio has been such a success that I recently launched Evolutionary Radio TV, which is basically a YouTube channel. So yeah, Now I'm teaching myself how to use Adobe Premiere.
Yeah. And
it's kind of like you said. I mean, like, you can do anything if you set your mind to it. Like, I'm on YouTube, searching how to use Adobe Premiere, like Adobe Premiere tutorials for beginners. And I mean, like, it's not that hard. You know, it just takes a little bit of initiative and drive.
I think that's what it is. It's initiative. Like, that's what I was going to say. I mean, like, these days with YouTube and Google, like, you can pretty much figure out how to do anything. I mean, like, it's ridiculous. You know, back in the day, you know, even 15 years ago when I was, you know, in my early 20s, like, things were a little bit different. The wealth of information just wasn't there. So these days, like, there's no excuse not to, you know, to figure things out and, you know, to be successful, because all the tools are out there. You just have to have that, you know, that drive.
What did you go to school for, Doug?
So I studied biochemistry and molecular biology, and I had a double major in economics.
Okay, that's kind of a unique combination. I'm guessing the economics, you're just interested in business, hey?
Well, I was always drawn to the sciences and math, and so I was good at that. I was not a liberal arts type. I didn't really like literature or any of that stuff. So I always was strong in the math and science part of things. I thought, I wanted to maybe be a doctor. Very quickly realized I didn't like blood whatsoever. You know, giving blood on the, you know, I almost passed out, and that was it for me, man. I was just done. I was like, I'm not being a doctor. And then the second thing was, like, I thought maybe I wanted to do research, but, you know, in a lab. But, man, it's like 4 years undergrad, 4 years graduate school, you know, 3 to 5 years postdoc, you know, I mean, just, it was not, it's really.
I'm doing research right now.
Yeah.
It's basically overpaid babysitting. Like, you're a prep coach, right? So, you know, you tell someone to follow a diet and they don't follow a diet.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the general public trying to get them to follow a diet or trying to get them to take a dietary supplement? It's the biggest headache ever. And you know what? Yeah. And one thing that people who aren't in academia, they always say, oh, that was a rat study. You know, that's garbage. But the thing is, with rats, you can do whatever you want, right? Like, if you want to give them a supplement, you can force them to take that supplement every day for 6 months.
Yeah.
Humans, half of them forget to take it. Half of them say they took it, but didn't actually, and lie about it. Half of them don't take it for a week and then realize that they forgot to take it for a week. So then they take 8 dosages on one day. Like,
yeah.
It's really, really frustrating. So in my opinion, actually having done research now, I would argue that rat studies are actually better than human studies.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to deal with the lab, and I was just like, well, you know, biochemistry is pretty specific. So I was like, I felt like I wanted to go into the more of the corporate route of the jobs that I quote unquote should have, which is like investment banking or management consulting, or, you know, one of those jobs. So I was like, well, I should probably do economics as well. I'm sure that would help. Main reason is, for my honors thesis, you know, I didn't want to do any lab work. So I thought it would be a lot easier to do it in economics.
You'd probably look pretty good in a lab coat though.
Yeah. I should say a lot easier. I should say it would be more enjoyable to do it in economics than, you know, racking my brain against the wall in a lab. It just wasn't for me. I don't know if I have the patience for the lab. I have the perseverance, just not the patience.
Yeah, like, lab work's not hard. It's just very boring and it's very meticulous. Because, like, let's say you have 100 participants, then you have all their data in Excel. They need to formulate it. They need to, you know, average it and run statistical analysis. So it's not like it's hard. It's just very isolated work and it's very boring. I mean, you're basically going to be behind a desk staring at a wall for 6 hours playing with Excel.
I hear you, man. I hear you.
Yeah. Welcome to my life. So what I wanted to ask you is, so obviously you love bodybuilding. What made you decide to start your own supplement company? Was that just, you know, like, you felt, hey, I love bodybuilding, it's a natural fit? Or was it kind of like you weren't happy with what was on the market?
That's exactly right. The latter. So, I mean, this was, I was actually working in the corporate world. I did not start the company thinking it was going to be, you know, millions of dollars and, you know, my career and all that stuff. I started the company because, as a natural bodybuilder, I wasn't happy with what was on the market. And so, you know, I took it was a $20,000 investment and came out with our first product, which was our meal replacement. At the time, I was working a corporate job, so it was hard to get all the meals in easily. So I wanted something that was based on whole food. So, like, oat and barley flour is the carb source, a good blend. All the meal replacements on the market, like those EAS Myoplex from way back in the day and Metrex, they just had maltodextrin, just different fillers and stuff that I didn't want.
It's funny that you say maltodextrin, because a lot of people don't know what that is. you know, they read maltodextrin, and it's technically a carbohydrate, but it actually has a higher glycemic index than table sugar. It rapidly spikes blood glucose. It's the last thing you want as a meal replacement.
Yeah, so post-workout, that's cool, right? But like during the day for breakfast, pre-workout, like I don't want that. So, I mean, that was the reason why Core and Core MRP was kind of came about. And then from there, it was just like there was a lot of things in the industry I didn't like. There was a ton, like proprietary blends were the standard. And I'm proud to say that we really were the first people back in the, people don't know this, but Core's been around since 2004, late 2004. We were the first people to do the non-proprietary blend thing, right? Like full disclosure, full efficacious doses of all our ingredients, you know, that are based on research. We were the first people really doing that. And I was doing it from a very selfish perspective. And that wasn't to make money. That was to make effective products that I could use myself as a bodybuilder. And then as I became more successful in bodybuilding, you know, the name, my name and the company's name kind of grew. And now we're way beyond just natural bodybuilding. And like, I wouldn't even say natural bodybuilders are my target. At the end of the day, I mean, I'm making products that I want to make. But you know, there's just so many other athletes out there that also want to use those products, and even just weekend warriors, you know?
That was the next thing I want to talk to you about. Like, I love bodybuilding. I did my first bodybuilding show when I was 15. But I'm actually competing in 10 days. So not this weekend, but next weekend. Uh-huh. And that's going to be my last bodybuilding show just because the sport's really dying. I mean, I love bodybuilding. I love it so much, but you get nothing out of it. It's such a time commitment. It's almost like living Groundhog Day every day. Like it's really hard to do anything else.
Yeah.
And the average person just doesn't care about bodybuilding, you know? If you told someone on the street, you know, I play in the NFL, they'd be like, wow, that's cool. Or you tell them I'm an MMA fighter. You tell them I do CrossFit. You tell them I play in the NHL. They're like, whoa, that's cool. You tell them that you're a bodybuilder, they think you're narcissistic, first of all, or they don't know what it is, or they think like you lift weights. They'll be like, oh, cool. How much can you bench?
Yeah, right.
So I wanted to hear, like, you're obviously very successful in bodybuilding. What are your thoughts in the whole bodybuilding as a sport, as an industry? Like, I've really seen it lose popularity the last couple of years. And I personally think that, you know, in 10 years, like there's always going to be that niche market.
Out of curiosity, what show are you doing?
The IDFA, the International Drug Free Association.
Canadian.
The biggest natural bodybuilding association in Canada. I think you're with WNBF, correct?
No, not the WNBF. At this point in time, it's alphabet soup. I mean, there's so many organizations.
That's another problem with natural bodybuilding.
That is the single product. And that is the single reason why bodybuilding, quote unquote, is dying. And it's not necessarily dying. I think the interest is still there. It's just, I would say it's splintering, right? And so when you have a splintering organization, so like I was an OCB amateur and I fed into the IFPA. That was kind of like the gold standard, right? And so
I don't think we even have the IFPA in Canada.
Well, it doesn't exist anymore at all. So now OCB split from the IFPA. There was all this legal issues. And now, so it's the IPE, which is basically like the old IFPA. And then there's the OCB and the OCB Pro, which feeds into the Yorton Cup, which used to be IFPA. And now it's OCB. It's crazy, right? And I'm close friends with all the a lot of the heads of those organizations. And so I tell them both, I was like, you know, you guys, you messed up when you split this. But my point is that it's not necessarily dying, it's splintering. And what I mean by that is there's too many shows, things are getting too diluted. So like we go to shows, I mean, we'll always support these shows. We give samples and stuff. We set up a booth, we have reps there. But like we don't get any return on that investment anymore because there's 30 competitors at a show, right? And you have a couple, 200 people show up in the audience. I mean, like that's nothing. And it looks
not,
like
not only that, everyone in the audience is like the competitor's mom and dad. And like, it's like some 60-year-old woman who you give her a sample of protein powder and she's like, what's this? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, so I think the interest is still there, but like there has to be some, and we've talked about this for years, coming together, these natural organizations. And there's too many egos, there's too many ideologies that are out there that certain people won't compromise on certain banned substance. What is a banned substance? What is not? So there's all of these issues that's killing really, or I should say splintering natural bodybuilding. I think the interest is still there. Now, I think the NPC shows are also down a little bit that I've seen this year. And so bodybuilding, and that's what I would consider more just general bodybuilding, because most people in the States, the biggest shows are NPC shows. I've seen them even, you know, be down a little bit. So I think we'll always have bodybuilding. It's just, we're in a funny phase right now. It's really weird. It's until the natural organizations start working together, and you know, it's going to be hard for those really great shows to come around again. Like, we're going to the Worlds, the IPE Worlds in Kansas City this weekend. I'm pretty sure that's going to be a great show. And the OCB Yorton Cup the previous weekend, but there's very few really great natural shows anymore.
No, I agree with you. I mean, I've volunteered at a couple natural shows, and when there's like 25, 30 competitors, it's just depressing. You know, if there's two guys in a bodybuilding class, like,
yeah,
it's not even fun for the competitors, you know? Like, yeah. At the same time, when you do nationals in the States and there's 70 people in your class, that's like a little ridiculous. But I mean, like,
especially bikini, like, how can you judge all these bikini women that they look exactly the same, and all these men's physique guys that look exactly the same? I mean, it's like, and so, like, that's another issue that is going on in national bodybuilding, is they're trying to keep up with the NPC and provide. Now there's physique, you know, there's the classic physique where you wear like the smaller shorts, but it's, and it's in between that and bodybuilding. But in natural bodybuilding, you could compete on all three of those stages. Like, there's not that much difference. Really, in the NPC, those are different levels.
Yeah, there's no freaks in natural bodybuilding. So, yeah, I hear you. The bodybuilder could pretty much throw on a pair of board shorts, lighten up his tan a little bit, and then do physique.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's also, you know, an issue going on right now.
Doug, what was your reason for staying natural?
You know, that's, I mean, I've been asked that before. I don't know if there's a single answer. I think there's a couple of reasons. I think number one is that it's illegal. You know, I'm a pretty conservative guy. And, you know, the fact that I would be, you know, having to buy contraband and stuff like that. Yeah. I mean, that's number one, especially
in the States. I mean, anabolic steroids in the States are, yeah, it's illegal as like cocaine or meth.
Absolutely.
Here in Canada, we have pretty lax laws. Like, you just, if you're just using it for personal usage, you just get a slap on the wrist. But yeah, yeah, people don't realize in the United States, if you get caught with even just a couple vials of like testosterone, you're looking at jail time. Like, it's not just a fine.
Yeah. I mean, so that's number one. Number two is, like, I've seen like even very young, when I was a little bit more naive, I could see that, like, this is not normal. It's not normal to look like be a 300 pound freak. Right. And like, I wanted to do, you know, train and all this stuff to extend my lifespan. Right. Like, I don't want it to, you know, shorten my lifespan. And to be honest with you, especially now with two little kids, the last thing I would want to do would be to shorten my lifespan. And, you know, like, these guys are dying when they're 50 or younger, you know, from the complications of just the steroid abuse. Like, you know, people can argue you can use them safely at certain doses, but like, even then, it's just risky. Like, we just don't really know. So there's just, you know, those are probably the two biggest reasons. And to be honest with you, when I first started, you know, and I won my first natural show, my novice show, and then I won the next show and won my pro card. And then I went to a pro show and I did really well. I think I got second in my first pro show to Philip Ricardo. Like, I was like, hey, like, I'm pretty good here, right? Like, I'm making progress, and, you know, maybe I can make a name for myself in the natural bodybuilding world. And then, you know, then you throw the supplement company into the mix, right? And like, I'm building a brand based on natural bodybuilding. You know, why would I want to jeopardize that, right? So there's just so many reasons. And you know, I kind of like the challenge. You know, it is definitely a fun challenge.
Here on Evolutionary Radio, we're not for or against steroids. You know, like, we just, yes, try to provide information. Yep. I have a chemical engineering degree, so I answer a lot of listeners' questions on steroids. I think a big problem a lot of guys make is that they start training, right away they start steroids, and they learn to train on steroids.
Yeah.
And the problem is that there's a big difference between training naturally and training on steroids. Like, when you're on gear, you're so anabolic and androgenic and aggressive and everything, you never have a bad workout, right? You don't learn that love of training. You learn that love of training. Yeah. You learn the love of training on gear, right? So we have all these listeners on. We've had all these listener questions where they say, you know, hey, I did a cycle. I finished my post-cycle therapy. The gym sucks now. You know, and the problem is no, the gym doesn't suck. It's just you're used to training on steroids. You never really built that base and that love for training naturally. And that's one take-home piece of advice I try to recommend everyone who listens to this podcast is if you want to use steroids, it's your body, it's your decision. I mean, what you do with your body is up to you. But you should build a base naturally first, because then you learn that work ethic, you learn that love for training, you learn that love of bodybuilding, so that when you're off cycle, you'll still train, you'll still eat well, you'll still be a bodybuilder because you love it. You know, you don't just love the feeling of being on juice.
Yeah, I mean, just to be clear, I'm like you. I don't have a problem. Like, I'm not one of those holier than thou naturals, which give all naturals a bad name. Where, like, if you use steroids,
Doug, we've had on some natural pro bodybuilders, and like, they talk, they basically say anyone who uses steroids are up there with Satan. And I'm like you, man. It's like, it's your body. What you decide to do with your body, that's up to you. It doesn't put any ill harm on me.
Yeah. Now, like. My big concern, my only issue is somebody using gear and competing naturally. That is the only issue that I have. And then you're just a punk, right? Like, so if you want to use gear, that's fine. There is places for you to compete. The non-tested organizations, that's where you should compete. Go for it. You know, like, I don't take anything away from you. You guys got to work hard too. You know, it's just when you try to, you know, skirt the laws.
It makes me laugh. Like, what do you win at a natural bodybuilding show? You get like a little plastic trophy. You might get like a tub of protein powder. I mean, even at the pro level, like, what's the biggest payout you've ever won? Maybe like $5,000.
Yeah, 3,500, I think. I won the overall. I think there was one show I got $2,500 for winning the heavyweight class or the middleweight class, and then I got another $2,500. So I think probably $5,000. No, that was because my wife also won too. I think is the reason why we had $5,000 that show. So I think it's probably 3,500 was when I won the Yorton Cup World Championship, where I won the overall as well. So $3,500, which didn't even cover near the cost of prep.
This is basically the take-home point. It's like, if you need to spend $5,000 on, you know, like a cycle and growth hormone to cheat, to compete in a natural organization, to win a little plastic trophy and, you know, like a tub of protein powder, like, that's just pathetic. You know what I mean? Like, I feel bad for that person. You know, like, I'm not even mad at him. I have sympathy for him. I'm like, really? Like, that's your goals in life?
Yeah, it's tough. But I mean, there's always going to be those people, you know? I mean, it's going to be there. Unfortunately, we wouldn't need testing if everyone was honest, but you know, it's going to be there.
And even the testing, there's no perfect way of testing anything. You know what I mean? Like, there's always going to be a way to cheat, and people are always going to find a way to cheat. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you just have to focus on being the best version of yourself. Whether or not someone you're competing against used substances, did not use substances, that's out of your control. All you can focus on is being the best version of yourself. And the problem is doing these blood tests, doing, you know, urine tests, they're very, very expensive. And there's no money in natural bodybuilding. So there's no way they can test every competitor. So normally what they do is they randomly test like a couple of the winners or things like that.
Well, so, I mean, I've been tested, I don't know how many times. And, you know, after I won my last round of shows, you know, I knew it was just going to cause a stir, right? So like, I posted the actual test results, like in the organization that I compete in, they'll actually do your urine and your analysis and send you all the results. And so like, I posted them up. And, you know, sure enough, I just did it because I know people are still going to, like, say ridiculous things. You know, everyone calls me drug Miller.
People would probably say, like, you bought someone's urine or something.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's just like, oh, you can't. Well, what about hair follicle testing? You're probably just, you know, you're using GH or you're using short acting, you know.
You know, esters clear out of your body in 24 hours.
Yeah. Exactly. So, like, you know, there's going to be no way to prove it anyways, you know, that you're 100% natural. And, you know, there's no way to, you know, catch everyone. So. It's a tough spot.
I know you got to take off right away, but my co-host, he wasn't able to make this podcast, but he's in Florida. I'm a Canadian, so I'm very, very polite, politically correct. I'm conservative like you. I go to church every Sunday. I don't curse. Steve, he's a little bit more of a a-hole. And yeah. One thing we try to remind people is big picture. So we had a listener question. This guy was preparing for his first bodybuilding show, and he was asking about growth hormone, and he wanted to use something like 10 IUs per day for like 4 or 5 months or something like that. And he was asking whether it was worth the cost, and he basically like add everything up. He was planning on spending $5,000 on just growth hormone for his bodybuilding show. And Steve is like, you're a fucking moron. You could get a mortgage on a house for that. He's like, really? Like, you're going to spend that much money on drugs for a first bodybuilding show? Think about it this way. You could have person B could go get a mortgage on a house. At the end of the day, who is a girl going to rather date? Some guy who wins, who even knows if you win, right? Versus some guy who, you know, is doing something with his life. You know, he's on the right path. He's got a house. He's paying off his mortgage. So it's like, I try to remind people with all this sort of stuff. And again, like, I'm not pro or against steroids, but I see people who want to do these Ronnie Coleman steroid cycles for their first bodybuilding show. And I'm like, this is your first bodybuilding show. Is it worth putting your health through all that? Is it worth the financial cost? Like, is it worth like, think about the big picture of all this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this is a conversation I have with a lot of my clients. I've seen it more times than not. I mean, that I wish I wish I haven't seen it this many times. It's just people's broken relationships because of bodybuilding. I'm talking natural and non-natural bodybuilding. Broken relationships, lost jobs, failed marriages, go on and on and on. You know, it's just like, it's this very selfish sport. And you have to be extremely mentally strong to do this and be successful at it, you know, both during it and after it. And when I mean successful, I don't mean necessarily winning the show. I mean, just keeping your shit together. You know what I mean? Like, you know, not wasting away relationships or giving up, you know, moments with your kids because you have to do X, what you have to go pose or something like that. Right. So you really need to find a very, I don't want to say balance because really there's in competitive bodybuilding, at least for me, I don't have a lot of balance when I'm competing. It's hard. Like if you want to be great at it. But like you have to have the right mindset and realize and take things into perspective that at the end of the day, this is just a hobby. This is just bodybuilding. Even if you're a pro bodybuilder, a pro natural bodybuilder, it's just a hobby. It's something you enjoy to do. So A, it's your decision to be a jerk, right? Like everyone is dieting, blames it on dieting. It's your decision to do this. So don't be a jerk to your family or your friends and your coworkers.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who's gotten to bodybuilding level conditioning knows you feel miserable the last couple of weeks. I mean, you feel like a walking zombie.
Your choice, yeah.
Yeah, but like, if you're depleted, if you're hungry, if you're tired because, you know, you can't sleep when you're that depleted and everything, is that your girlfriend's problem? Like, is that her fault? No, yeah. Like, don't be a dick. Don't take it out on her. Like,
that's the mental toughness. Like, that's the mental, I wouldn't even say it's just mental. It's emotional, right? It's like having that emotional intelligence to see the position that you're in physically, right? That, like, you have to be very cognizant of your interactions and, you know, how they affect other people. And I think a lot of people struggle with that, unfortunately.
It's like that famous saying, be the person that your dog thinks you are.
I've never heard that, but yeah, that's pretty good.
No, like, honestly, like, there's certain people where you meet them and they're just full of energy. They're full of life and you just want to be around them. You know, there's other people like you're with them and just immediately they rob you of that energy. Yeah. One thing I really try to do is be that energetic person. Like you don't know what people are going through. You don't know if that person just found out that they got diagnosed with cancer. Mm-hmm. You know, like I actually managed a Starbucks my last year of university. And one thing that really taught me is you come across so many people every single day and you don't know what every person's going through. That person might be a dick to you, that might be because their dad passed away the night before. Yeah. Like you don't know what people are going through. So I always try to, you know, be that positive, uplifting light and that smile. Like you might be that only smile that person saw that entire day. Right. For so sure. That's one thing I really try to do in everything in life, you know, not just bodybuilding, just be a positive, good person. So Doug, yeah. I know you have an important meeting you gotta take off to. My last question is, what's next for you? When's your next show?
That's the question I always get asked on these podcasts. And I never have a straight answer. I mean, to be honest with you, right now, I'm focused on the businesses. I'm focused on my two little kids and my wife. I'm still always going to be training hard, living the lifestyle, eating right. But to step on stage right now, I mean, I owe it to my family. I owe it to my, you know, 30 employees or, you know, whatnot, to across the different businesses to, you know, really focus on them right now. So I'm not saying I'm never coming back, but at the moment, and I'm not going to say that it hasn't been in my mind, right, to come back and compete soon, but I don't know is the answer.
Same thing with me. Like when I announced I'm retiring, retiring is maybe a strong word, like who knows, but it's, I'm still going to be a bodybuilder. I'm still going to go to the gym every day. My meals are going to be exactly the same. It's not like I'm going to stop working out or anything. It's just right now there's other things in my life that need to take priority. Like I'm about to finish my master's. I want to do my PhD. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's bodybuilding will always be there. And, you know, sometimes you just got to learn to put your foot, you put things on cruise control and, you know, focus on the other things in life. And then you can always come back. There's always going to be a show. Every single year there's shows. So
they'll always be there is what I say to people. You know, it'll always be there.
Okay. Doug, we really appreciate you coming on. You got any final shout outs or anything you want to?
No, anytime, man. And if we want to do this again, I'd be happy to do it. I know. Sorry, I had to run early, but we just got a really big meeting in a half hour here. So hopefully going to go crush this. And then, you know, maybe we can link up again at some time in the future.
Well, good luck on your meeting. For your host, Trevor Kuritson, and for our special guest, Doug Miller, this has been another episode of Evolutionary Radio. Live your life, look good doing it. Thanks for listening. Thank you.